What does a reporter need in order to be effective as an investigative reporter?
Back in Philadelphia, it was a very competitive news market. A lot of people doing a lot of the same stories and doing them exceedingly well. And when you're at a small newspaper, you realize, I've got to find stories that other people are not covering. Philadelphia is a big city. They've got to be there. So what would I do? I would start digging through documents. I would start trying to cultivate sources. This is a bedrock of how you begin to do investigative reporting. And what's changed since I started doing that is a craft that they call computer-assisted reporting. The computer can allow you to do tremendous things these days. And if a journalist were to learn how to use databases and use software, sic it at a story, you can find things that you might otherwise miss.
Give me some examples.
Okay. If you could envision a very simple example, the course of the New York City Marathon. It's a starts off in Staten Island, for your listeners who don't know. Starts running through Brooklyn into Queens, then over the Queensboro Bridge into Manhattan, takes a sharp turn up First Avenue towards the Bronx, and then loops down into Central Park. So you can kind of envision that fishhooky shape. Well, I like to run marathons. It's kind of a hobby of mine. And I was curious about the marathon, and I thought, you know what? I'd been working on a bunch of investigative stories. I thought I needed a break. So I started thinking of some possible marathon stories that I might do just as a busman's holiday. And as I was thinking about it, I thought, well, you know what? I need to start seeing the big picture of marathons. Maybe I can tease something out. So I called up the New York City Roadrunners and asked them for a database of the last marathon. They said, sure, no problem. They sent it to me. It was a spreadsheet, simple spreadsheet, and I started leafing through it. And I had a couple feature ideas in mind, and I thought that having the database might help me find some people to interview and help tell a story. And I kind of wrote one of those feature stories. It was about people who run the marathon, and they get right near the finish line, and then for some reason or another, collapse or don't finish. And I just wanted to talk with those people about what it's like not to finish a race, to get so close. And I literally, by using the database, found somebody who was in Central Park, could actually see the big blue overhanging finish line and collapsed right there. And that's a story that hadn't been told. It was kind of a nice feature story. But going through the data, I noticed something else, some things that didn't make sense. And I started scratching around a little bit more and a little bit more. And what I realized is that Rosie Ruiz, the famous runner who cheated to win the Boston Marathon, she's not a one-off. That actually every year there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of people who cheat at the New York City Marathon. Something I'd never imagined before. I'd never even contemplated that someone would actually do that. So go back to that fishhooky shape. What you saw as you started going through the data is that there's actually a favorite spot to cheat. And that spot is, as you come off the Queensboro Bridge, why bother making that sharp turn to the Bronx? Turns out that there's dozens of runners who just like to then kind of blend into the crowd and then kind of meander over to Central Park and then go cross the finish line and collect their medal. Kind of amusing at this point. Not quite sure what to do with the story at this point in the reporting, but it's certainly interesting and nothing that I'd seen reported elsewhere, that many people cheat. And it turns out with some phone calls that actually cheating is widespread, not just at the New York City Marathon, but at other marathons across the country and indeed around the world.
Now, Andrew, how could you find out where the actual cheating occurred? I mean, are there stats on that?
There isn't stats on that per se. This is going through the data and teasing it out. It turns out that in the New York City Marathon's database that they sent me, it doesn't just have the name of the runner and the place of where they're from and their age and sex. It has more than that. It also has their finishing time, but it also has the time where they crossed each mat along the way in the course. And as I was going through the data, I realized that things were missing, that there would be runners who would miss a mat or two, kind of understandable. It's a computer chip, may not always work. But then there'd be runners who missed five or six or seven mats. I was thinking like, wow, that's kind of interesting. And yet suddenly their chip suddenly works as they cross the finish line. How could it be that your chip's working fine in Brooklyn, doesn't work in Manhattan until you get across the finish line in Central Park? So you start making some phone calls, start doing some digging, and you realize that there's rampant cheating going on in the New York City Marathon. Now, one of the things that we talk about in investigative reporting circles is like, look, there are a lot of stories out there, but what's the harm? What's the foul? Who's getting hurt? So in the story I just described to you, dozens of people are cheating. Kind of amusing. Who really cares? Does it really matter that some people are kind of cheating themselves and claiming they won something they didn't? Well, let me tell you about Alan Miller. Alan Miller is a man who's run the New York City Marathon more than 25 times. Alan Miller showers with the guys from the New York City Police Department. And when he finishes the race, he likes to take his friends out to Mickey Mantle's at Central Park. Alan Miller's about 61 years old when I was reporting this story. And Alan Miller would have celebrated the biggest day of his life because while he didn't win the New York City Marathon, he won his age group. He would have been the fastest 60-plus runner that day. It was his day. Let me tell you about Hermes Lupi. Hermes Lupi is a 61-year-old Italian shoe store owner. Hermes Lupi decided to sell his bib for more than 300 euros, and he sold it to a guy who's 25 years old. The New York City Roadrunners, of course, never knew that the bib was transferred. It was an illegal transfer.
I have no idea what you're talking about here, Andrew.
You're wearing a bib. You wear
a bib.
The number that you see emblazoned across your shirt. And Hermes Lupi decided to sell that bib number, his entry, his ticket into one of the most coveted marathons in the world. Hermes Lupi sold that for more than 300 euros to a 25-year-old Italian, who then ran it like a 25-year-old Italian and beat Alan Miller by a couple minutes.
Wow.
That day, Hermes Lupi was listed as the winner of that age group. Alan Miller showered up, said, "Oh, so close." He told me later, it would have been the biggest day of his life. He would have celebrated with his friends like no other day. Instead, he went back home a little dejected, so close, you know, kind of congratulations. When I spoke with Alan Miller, he's suffering from cancer. He's not sure whether he'd ever run a marathon again. That was his day. He was robbed of it. He wasn't the only person, by the way, who was robbed of that day of winning their age group in the New York City Marathon. It turns out that in that very same race, there was a guy who would have won the, there's like an 18 to 19-year-old category. That guy is a shoe store clerk at the time I interviewed him in Long Island at a running store. His parents, his girlfriend, he told me, they don't really believe that he's a good runner. He ran that day, and he would have won his age group, but he didn't on paper that day. Because it turns out that there was a student from Liberty University, that's Jerry Falwell's college in Virginia. And by the way, this is a student who on blogs at Liberty University had written about the ethics of running. He too gave his bib to another entrant. That entrant was an older man. That entrant ended up winning on paper that race and robbed the young gentleman on Long Island of what he said would have been his big day, the chance to show his parents and his girlfriend that he actually is a good runner. So to go back, going through the data allowed me to find these stories. These are stories that no one had written. These are stories that had gone untold. What I thought would be a busman's holiday turned out to be a story about widespread cheating, about people, including a man suffering from cancer who was robbed of his biggest day. And it's a story that we ran then on the front page of the New York Times a couple of years ago.
And what kind of response comes from a story like that? In other words, you know, the old saying of you throw the pebble in the pond and you get all these concentric circles and it changes history. What happened after that piece ran?
Sure. Sometimes you work on stories and it leads to changes in laws. Sometimes you work on stories and people get arrested. We ran that story on the day of the New York City Marathon 1 year later.
Wow.
And I was actually a runner that day in that race. I did run the full course. And I think my later times, you know, as I was crossing each mile, Matt will prove that. It was certainly really interesting to be among the crowd of those 40 plus thousand runners and hear your story being talked about among all those people. And it certainly did raise awareness about widespread cheating. and hopefully improve efforts to clamp down on those kinds of things.